Well, again, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Faith. It is freezing outside. Thank you for being here. As a pastor, every time you get one of these winter weekends, you go, oh, this is going to impact attendance, you know? And so you are the faithful. You are here. You really love Jesus. Everybody who stayed in bed, we're going to question their salvation, all right? Okay. So my name's Mike. I'm one of the pastors here, and just it's good to have you here with us. We are right in the middle of a series called The Fundamentals, and this series is all about how to win in our relationships, which, when you think about it, makes the series relevant to just about all of us, because most of us have relationships. Anybody here have no relationships in their life? Nobody? All right. Just Johannes and back there, all right? Anybody here have relationships they'd like, you know, a few, they wish they had fewer relationships than they have? There's a few you'd like to cut out, all right? We've all got them, right? And the fact is, no matter how good we are at them, we've all got room to grow. Even those of us who are doing really well, there's room for us to do better. And so we're just taking some time to figure out, how do we do that? And to do this, this whole series is built on this idea that it isn't that complicated. That more often than not, when we struggle in a relationship, it's not some deep-seated, highly complex thing that's driving that. It's because one or both of us in that relationship, we're failing to live into some kind of fundamental relational principle. And so in this series, we're just going back to the basics. We're looking at very simple truths. They have the ability to have a profound impact on our relationships. And so in week one, we talked about being selfless instead of being selfish. In week two, we talked about how to fight fair instead of how to fight dirty. And this week, we're gonna go after how to be forgiving instead of being unforgiving. Now, right on the front end, I'm just going to acknowledge, forgiveness is hard. When you talk about fundamentals and things that really make or break relationships, it's a simple concept, but it is a really difficult thing to do, especially after you've been wounded by another person. And so I won't say that what we're going to talk about today is easy. I will say it's incredibly important to our relationships. Unforgiveness, it will destroy a relationship. And a person choosing to extend forgiveness, I've watched it bring relationships back from the brink. Now, as we talk about forgiveness today, we're going to go to Jesus. We're going to see what Jesus himself had to say about this. And we're going to look at Matthew's biography of Jesus' life. Chapter 18, Jesus talks about this. In fact, in chapter 18, Jesus is teaching, and he's teaching about what to do when somebody hurts you, when somebody sins against you. And a number of people are listening to Jesus teach. One of them is Peter, one of his disciples. And Peter gets this idea from Jesus that when somebody hurts you, that there's a call, if you're following Jesus, to seek to be reconciled with that person, to extend forgiveness to that person. And sensing how difficult forgiveness is, Peter goes to Jesus with a question. Because he wants to know some things about this. He's struggling with this concept. So Peter comes to Jesus and he asks. He says, Lord, how often should I forgive someone who sins against me? Seven times? You know, Peter's basically saying, look, Jesus, you're talking about forgiving. Where are the limits? Like, when's enough enough? When's enough enough? Where's the cap? When am I off the hook on this thing? And Peter even gives a suggestion. How about seven times, Jesus, right? You know, which Peter probably thought he was being spiritual, because the contemporary thinking of that day said, if somebody sins against you, they get three strikes. Somebody does the same thing three times over, that's it. You don't have to forgive them anymore. So Peter is basically doubling the recommended forgiveness allotment for his day. And I think when Peter came and he did this, I think Jesus' answer for Peter probably caught Peter off guard. Because Jesus says to Peter, no, Peter, it's not three times, it's not seven times, it's seven times 70 times. 490 times, Peter. I mean, he might as well be telling Peter, forgiveness is supposed to be offered at an unlimited kind of, in an unlimited way. There's no limit to forgiveness, Peter, which actually is what Jesus was saying. Because 7 times 70, he wasn't telling Peter to do the math. 7 times 70 was a figure of speech in that day meant to communicate an unlimited number. Jesus is saying, Peter, you should forgive this person who wounds you an unlimited number of times. Now, Jesus, he knows how difficult that idea is. He knows there's something inside of us that just bristles up at that sometimes. And so before Peter can even answer, before Peter can even counter, Jesus tells Peter a story. A story that's designed to help Peter then and us now understand why it's so important to forgive. To help us understand how it's going to impact our relationships. A story designed to try and motivate us to choose forgiveness, even though it's so difficult. Peter gets to sit and listen to this story by Jesus. And again, it's in Matthew 18. And rather than read through it word for word, what I'm going to do is I'm going to just kind of summarize Jesus' story for you and try and work in the cultural indicators and draw the meaning out. So here's how Jesus' story goes. In Jesus' story, you have a king who's going to settle accounts with his governors. So we'll say King Amanda, right? All right? If you don't know Amanda, Amanda's one of our administrators here at Faith. Yeah, well, you could say queen, but it says king, and I memorized king, so we're just going to go with king, right? So King Amanda decides to settle accounts with her governors, right? And basically what a king would do in that day and age is they would take their kingdom, they divide it up into different geographic areas, and they'd put one governor over one and one governor over another, and one of their jobs was to collect tax revenue for the king. So the king basically is like, he sends out a memo to all the governors, show me the money, all right? It's time to, you've been collecting it, it's time to turn it over. Now, Amanda has a number of different governors. One of her governors, we'll say, is Governor Eric, okay? All right, so if you don't know Eric is the pastor to students here at Faith. And Eric's job is collect taxes, turn them over to Amanda. Now, Eric has a problem. And you, if you know Eric, you may say, well, yes, Eric does have a problem. In this instance, Eric's problem is Eric can't pay the bill. He's been collecting the taxes, but he can't pay the bill. And his problem is not a small problem. Eric doesn't just owe 1 year's worth of taxes. Eric owes the equivalent of 11 years worth of tax revenue. Let me try and put that in perspective. So according to the interweb, the city of Farmington Hills for 2018 was scheduled to collect about $50 million in property taxes alone. So if Eric was the governor for Farmington Hills, he would owe Amanda right now $550 million. That's a lot of money. Now, you may say, okay, well, like, why did Amanda let it go so long? How'd she let things get this, you know, far out of control? Who knows? Probably the more important question to ask is, where did the money go, right? You know, like, what has Eric been doing with all the revenue he's been collecting, all right? And here's the thing. This may be hard for us to relate to. Jesus describes a world where government institutions don't manage money well and where political figures are sometimes corrupt, right? You know, just poof, blow your mind. But this is the world Jesus is living in. People can relate to this, right? So Amanda finally decides, this is it. This has gone as far as I can let this go. I can't let this go any further. I need to do something. And as a king, she gets to be judge. She gets to be jury. She gets to be, you know, deliver the sentence. So she lets Eric know, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have you arrested. We're going to liquefy all your assets. We are going to put you in prison. We're going to sell your family into slavery. And you will sit in prison and rot until you can pay all of this back. Now, Eric hears this, and he's desperate. And so he basically begs Amanda, Just show me some mercy. I swear, you give me some time and I'll pay it all back. Right? Which when you think about it, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Where's he going to come up with $50 million, let alone better than $500 million? He has an overwhelming debt that he is powerless to pay back. And yet, Amanda hears his plea, and she does the unthinkable. She looks at this governor who has completely mismanaged her funds, who has no way of making good on the debt he owes, who has done nothing to warrant her favor, and she releases him. She releases him of the debt. She forgives it. And so off Eric goes. Until Eric runs into a fellow governor, we'll say Governor Laura. All right? If you don't know Laura, Laura's our pastor to students here. And Laura owes Eric a few thousand dollars, right? And so when Eric sees Laura, it comes to mind, she owes him a few thousand bucks, and he grabs her by the throat and basically just throttles her, you know? You need to pay me what you owe me. And Laura, she basically parrots the exact same thing. She's like, hey, just be patient with me, have mercy on me, give me some time, and I'll pay back everything I owe. Now, you would think, after just having spoken those words himself, Eric would be inclined to extend a little bit of mercy, right? Nope. Instead, Eric has Laura thrown into prison until she can pay back every penny. And if you're thinking to yourself, well, what kind of jerk is he? Like, what kind of two-faced hypocrite can ask for so much forgiveness in one moment and fail to show so little forgiveness in the next? That's exactly what all of their fellow governors were thinking. And so they go to the king, and they tell the king what's happened. And King Amanda is understandably incensed by what she sees. And I don't know if this is incensed or she's just been sucking on a lemon or what, but she told me this is incensed. So she's incensed by what she sees. And so she decides, fine. If this is how you want to do this, if you can ask for forgiveness and yet refuse to forgive it, if you're so eager to receive mercy and then so unwilling to show any, fine. These are the rules you want to play by, Eric. Fine, we can do this. And so she hands Eric over to the jailers and puts him into prison. And he's just miserable there. Look at the poor guy, right? Where he's left to be tortured until he can pay back everything that he owes. And then Jesus ends his story very abruptly with these disturbing words. Jesus says, and this is what my heavenly Father will do to you unless you forgive your brothers and sisters from your heart. Jesus says, take Eric, hand him over. He's going to be tortured by the jailers. And this, Peter, is what my Father in heaven will do to you unless you forgive your brothers and sisters in your heart. Now, that's disturbing. Jesus knows that. He knows that. Jesus knows that, and I think Jesus did that on purpose because he's trying to get our attention. He's trying to help us understand how important forgiveness is, what it will do in our relationships, that it makes sense to live into forgiveness as opposed to withholding it. And he wants to help us move towards it. And so he tells this story, a story that has embedded into it principles about forgiveness. So let me share some of those principles with you. First principle is this. The principle of unbalanced scales. The principle of unbalanced scales. What Jesus wants me to understand, one of the things he wants me to understand from his story is that all of us here in this room, we are just like that first governor. we are just like that first governor in the sense that all of us have a debt. Now, our debt isn't a fiscal one, but all of us have a debt of sin that we owe to the King of the universe. See, the Bible teaches that every time I sin, every time I do something I know I shouldn't do, every time I fail to do something I know that I should do, that ultimately it's God against whom I sin. Now, sure, if I do things that I know I have no business doing, will that mess up my life? Absolutely. Will that affect the lives of people who are connected to me? It sure will. But ultimately, it's about me and God. It's why David will write in Psalm 51, he'll say, "Against you and you alone have I sinned." Now, David's writing about an incident where he engaged in sin that literally destroyed the lives of multiple people, that took his own life and family and turned it all upside down. And yet David is going to say, "Against you and you alone have I sinned." He's recognizing ultimately his sin is against God himself. Jesus wants us to understand from his story that every one of us, we've got a debt of sin that we owe to God. And just like that first governor, the debt of sin that we owe, it is enormous. I have a mountain of sin that I have committed against God. I have an overwhelming debt of sin that I am no more capable of paying to God than that governor was of coming up with $500 million to pay to the king. Now, sometimes we hear that, and some of us kind of take offense at that. Some of us will sit there and think, well, okay, look, like, I'm not perfect. But, like, I'm not that bad. Like, who do you think I am? What do you think I've done? You know, like, what you're suggesting here, that's kind of offensive, Mike. And I get that. I would say two things. I'd say, first of all, it's not me saying, it's Jesus. So if you want to get upset up with something, you know, get upset with Jesus. But I will admit this. I think Jesus is right about you. And I know he's right about me. I once had this driven home. I was sitting, listening to somebody else preach. And the preacher that day challenged everybody in the audience to go home that week and try and come up with a number that as accurately as they could captured the total number of times that they had sinned over the course of their entire life. I thought, okay, how am I going to do this? So I tend to be an analytical kind of person. I thought this could be a good idea. He made a compelling argument. So I went home that week and I tried to do it. And what I did to try and do this, I started out just listing all of the sins of commission that I could think of that I knew I had engaged in over the course of my life. And by sins of commission, that's like things I've done I know I shouldn't have done, as opposed to sins of omission where here's things I know I should do and I'm just not going to do them. So I just got out a piece of paper, started writing down all the sins of commission that I know I had committed over the course of my life. Then I went, okay, let me try and come up with a number for each one of these things. You know, so like how many times have I lied? How many times have I been greedy? How many times have I been selfish? How many times did I take what wasn't mine? How many times did I lust after somebody? How many times did I engage in inappropriate sexual behavior? How many times did I rebel against somebody who was in legitimate authority over me? How many times did I lose my temper with my wife or my kids or my siblings or my friends? How many times have I been bitter or resentful? How many times did I judge somebody unfairly? How many times was I materialistic and put stuff over God or over people? How many times was I proud, tried to make myself out to be better than something I was? How many times did I have too much to drink? How many times have I been jealous? I mean, you know, the list could just go on and on and on. And to be honest, for me, it did. And I just take each one of those things and go, okay, like on average, as best as I could figure out, how many times a week would I say I did each one of these things? You know, so I take lying. I like how many times a week would I say I lied? And I tried to figure it out like before Jesus and after Jesus, because hopefully I lied less after deciding to follow Jesus than before I, you know, decided. But I go, okay, how many times a week? Multiply that number times 52 for number of weeks in a year. Multiply that number times the number of years that I'd been committing that sin. I started doing the math. It wasn't pretty. Like the numbers were overwhelming. Frankly, they were embarrassing. I have no intention of sharing them with you. It's none of your business, all right? Don't ask me afterwards. I'm not going to tell you. But I was generous to myself. All I did was the sins of commission. I didn't even try and do the math for the stuff I should have done but hadn't. I got done. I had a mountain of sin, an overwhelming debt of sin that I owed to the King of Heaven. I had no way to make good on. In his story, Jesus wants me to realize this. Wants me to realize that the scales are unbalanced and then live in light of that. See, if somebody does something wrong to me, somebody commits a sin against me, like if I'm picky, maybe I can come up with, you know, 2, 4, maybe even, you know, half a dozen specific things that they did wrong to me. If I'm being asked to forgive somebody of 6 things, that compared to the number of sins that I've asked God to forgive me of, that's nothing. Somebody could sin against me 7 times. They could sin against me 70 times 7 times. Still, the number of sins that I'm being asked to forgive doesn't come close to being anything like the number of sins I've been forgiven of. The scales are grossly imbalanced, and they're imbalanced in my favor. I'm coming out way, way ahead on this deal. First principle Jesus wants me to get is that the scales are imbalanced. Second principle Jesus wants me to get is the principle of conflicting desires. See, when it comes to forgiveness, we want to be forgiven. Like when wrong's been done and we're the ones that done it, we want to be forgiven. Most people, they don't want what they deserve. Like if somebody's noble, they'll stand up and they'll take what they deserve, but normal healthy people, they don't want that. Normal, healthy people, they do not look forward to getting punished. I don't care what you read in 50 Shades of Grey. That is not normal, all right? Normal people want to be forgiven. Trouble is, it's so common to want to receive forgiveness, but not to be as eager about extending it when somebody's done something wrong to us. It's normal, and it's just so common not to want to get what we deserve, but when somebody does something wrong to us, to want them to get what they deserve. It's so easy to want forgiveness, but to want to dole out judgment. Somebody will do something to us, and we'll say things like, hey, somebody's got to pay. We're not just going to sweep this under the rug. No, justice needs to be done here. Just think about it. You're out on I-275 today after church, and you're going a little bit faster than you should be going, right? And the blue lights light up your rearview mirror, and you get pulled over. As that cop is walking up to your car, what are you hoping, dreaming, even praying that he's going to do? What is it? Yay, yeah, give you a warrant, let you off. You know, how many of you, cop walks up, you roll down your window, officer, I was speeding, give me what I deserve. I need the ticket, you know? No. No, we all want to be forgiven. Now, you're driving down I-275 after church today, and somebody blows by you at more than 20 miles an hour past the speed limit. They cut you off as they do so. They're moving so fast that the slipstream from their car makes your whole vehicle rock like this, right? 2 miles down the road, you see that person pulled over by the state trooper. What are you hoping they do? Yes, you want a ticket. Like, throw the book at them, arrest them. They need to do hard time, right? It's just natural. When we do something wrong, we want to be forgiven. We don't want what we deserve. But when somebody wrongs us, we want justice. We want to receive forgiveness quickly. But we're slow to extend it. Can you see how those are conflicting desires? They are. And the thing is, The king can see that. The king of the universe can see that. Which takes us to our third principle, the principle of imprisonment. It's a crazy thing when you think about it. Like, on one hand, we can look at that first governor in that story, and so easily we can think, what kind of jerk would do that? What kind of two-faced hypocrite would beg for mercy and not show any, could receive so much forgiveness on one hand and refuse to forgive so little the next? But then, we can come to God and ask for complete forgiveness of all of our sin at the expense of his son's life, and then turn around and refuse to forgive our brothers and sisters in our heart. And Jesus sees that. And he says, hand him over to the jailers. Put him in prison where he'll be tortured. That's what my heavenly Father will do if you refuse to forgive your brother and sister from your heart. And we chafe against what Jesus is saying there. And we look for pastors to come up with slick, clever things that'll sanitize Jesus' words or take the edge off or make what Jesus has said more digestible. I don't think I'd be doing you any favors by doing that. What Jesus is saying here, he is desperately trying to grab a hold of our attention. He's trying to get us to understand God is not interested in my hypocrisy or yours. He's not interested in us being two-faced with him, wanting one thing from him and refusing to give it to somebody else. If you think about it, we wouldn't put up with that from somebody in relationship with us. Why do we expect God to do so? And Jesus desperately, he wants us to understand our hypocrisy, it will imprison us. It will put us into a cell where the door is locked from the inside. As we refuse to forgive others, our hypocrisy and our unforgiveness, it will torture us. It'll torture us emotionally. It'll torture us spiritually. It'll torture us relationally. It is why some of the most unhappy, emotionally distraught people you know are people who are unforgiving. It's why when I'm refusing to forgive somebody, it's why I feel so dry and dead and disconnected from God spiritually. It's why when I refuse to forgive another person, it's no wonder that relationship goes south. And as much as I want to think this is just this relationship, I fail to realize that my unforgiving heart, it is going to bleed over and it is going to impact on some degree all of my other relationships. Jesus gets this, and he wants something better for us and our relationships than that. And so he jars us with this statement to understand you can choose not to forgive, but you're going to imprison yourself, and it's going to torture you emotionally and relationally and spiritually as you do this. And so he calls us to something different, something better. Now, it's possible to hear Jesus' words and go, okay, they make sense. He makes a compelling argument and still wrestle with forgiveness. It's possible to hear what Jesus has to say and go, okay, I know I need to do this. I even to some degree want to do this, but how? How do we do this? So let me share with you some tips for forgiveness that just I've found helpful. Because I stand up here doesn't mean forgiveness comes any easier to me than it does to you sitting out there. There are times where I've known, okay, I need to do this, and it is just so difficult. So let me share with you some things that I've found help me move me in that direction when I'm struggling. First tip would be this: understanding forgiveness. It can be so helpful to understand what forgiveness is and what forgiveness isn't. What forgiveness is and what forgiveness is distinct from. We'll start with what it is. When you talk about this word that we get out of the New Testament, forgiveness, at its root, at its most basic form, to forgive is to release. To forgive is to release. And really that happens in a couple different ways. To forgive is to release you of what you owe me. See, when somebody does something wrong to us, there's this thing that wells up inside of us that says, that person owes me. They owe me an apology. They owe me some kind of restitution. They owe me some kind of reconciliation. They owe me something. When I forgive, I choose to release that person of whatever it is I think they owe me. I'm going to release them. Not only so, but when I forgive, I release my right to respond. Again, somebody does something wrong to us, and there's this thing that wells up inside of us that says, I've got a right now to respond, whether that's with judgment or confrontation or retribution or revenge, right? You just hurt me. I have, in some way, I get to respond. I get to strike back. When I forgive, I release my right to respond. At its most basic level, forgiveness is release. I'm going to release what you of what you owe me. I'm going to release my right to respond. And that being the case, forgiveness is a choice. There are a lot of other things associated with forgiveness that are so much more difficult when it comes to can I choose this or not. I can choose whether or not I'm going to release you of what you owe me. And I can choose whether or not I'm going to release my right to respond. It's a choice. And as a choice, it can happen in an instant. It can happen in a moment. I can choose to release you. And the moment I do, forgiveness has taken place. Now, I may have to do this multiple times because I'm releasing and I'm picking back up and I'm releasing and I'm picking back up. But I can release in a moment. That's what forgiveness is. Now, let's talk about what forgiveness is distinct from. Forgiveness is distinct from negative emotions. These two things, because they're in such close proximity, oftentimes we will equate one with the other. They're different. They're different. And so when somebody does something wrong to us, oftentimes there's all these negative emotions that well up inside of us. We're hurt, we're bitter, we're resentful, we're angry, and more. Now, I will tell you, you got to deal with those emotions. Like if you hold on to that junk, it will poison your relationship just as much as unforgiveness will. But it is a distinct thing. With forgiveness, I can choose to release in a moment. Emotions, they take a lot longer to work through. And you can forgive someone, you can release an individual and still be working through those negative emotions. Just because I'm still hurting doesn't mean I haven't forgiven you. I can release you and still be wrestling with the emotions. The other thing, though, that forgiveness is distinct from is forgiveness is distinct from trust. Forgiveness is to release. Trust is to put myself in a position where you could hurt me again. Trust is to choose to make myself vulnerable to you again. Forgiveness is given. Trust is earned. Forgiveness is based off of nothing. Your behavior is not the issue here. I am commanded to forgive. I give forgiveness regardless of behavior. Trust is earned based on behavior. I will tell you all day long, be generous and unlimited with your forgiveness. I will tell you, be thoughtful and wise about trust. Now again, if a relationship is going to be all it's meant to be, trust needs to be part of the equation. But wise people, they take into account, I'm going to extend trust here. Does this make sense? Is there behavior on this person's part that would lead me to believe on some level they're worthy of trust? Forgiveness and trust are not the same thing. When we talk about how do I forgive, understanding what forgiveness is and what it isn't can really be helpful. Tip number two, Compare and dream. Compare and dream. When somebody's hurt me and I'm struggling to forgive, I'll just kind of try and get away from the situation and go, okay, what am I being asked to forgive and what have I been forgiven of? And so that exercise we talked about earlier, if you've never done that, I can't encourage you enough. Spend some time this week. Try and come up with as accurate a number as you can for the total number of times you have sinned against God over the course of your life. And the next time somebody's hurt you and you're struggling to forgive, just take a step back and go, okay, what am I being asked to forgive? And what have I been forgiven of? Every time the scales are unbalanced and are unbalanced in my, I mean, it's just, I'm coming out way, way ahead. They're unbalanced in my favor. It's helpful for me to think about that. It's also helpful for me to just dream. To just imagine, what would my life be like today if when I came to God and asked for forgiveness, God refused to forgive me? Told me, no, you're not getting that. I shudder to think what my life would be like without the forgiveness of God. The best things that I know in my life today, I know because of His forgiveness. If that's the case, what good reason would I have withholding forgiveness for somebody else? And finally, tip number three, keep praying. Keep praying. When I find I'm in a spot where somebody's done something and it hurts me and I'm struggling to release that person, I'm struggling to release my right to try and do something back, I'll talk to God. I'll talk to God about that person. I'll talk to God about what happened, about what I'm feeling, about what they did, about what's going on. And oftentimes the conversation will go, you know, God, I know I'm supposed to forgive this person. If I'm just perfectly honest, I don't want to. God, I know I'm supposed to forgive this person. I don't know if I can. Like, I don't know if I have what it takes to choose this. God, you have got to step in and do something inside of me. I'll pray that prayer and I'll keep praying that prayer and I'll keep praying that prayer until God does something. So far, every time, God's answered that prayer. Sometimes more quickly, sometimes more slowly, but every time He has met me in that. See, with God, not only do I receive forgiveness that I did not deserve, that I did not earn, that I was powerless to bring into my life myself, but in God, I also receive the power to forgive others. So let me ask you, you have somebody in your life who you need to forgive. As we talk about what Jesus has talked about, is this a struggle for you? And what would it do? What could it do for your relationships if you chose to forgive? Like, what could it do for your relationship with yourself? How would it impact your emotional health if you let go and you forgave? How would it impact your relationship with God? How would it impact you spiritually if you forgave? What would it do for your relationship with that person? With your spouse? With your parent? With your sibling? How would it impact your relationships at work? How would it impact your relationships with your friends? What would it do for your relationship with the person you go to church with, who you've been withholding forgiveness from? If you decide, you know what? Enough. I'm going to unlock this prison door from the inside. I'm leaving the jailer and the torture behind. I'm going to follow Jesus, and I'm going to forgive. Simple truth. Not an easy one. A simple one. So incredibly impactful for our relationships.